From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Saturday at the U.S. Open tennis final between Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka. Early in the second set, Williams was given a warning for illegal coaching. The umpire said her coach was using both hands to motion her to move forward on the court. Williams pushed back, saying he wasn't coaching and that she would never cheat. Several games later, Williams lost her serve and she slammed her racket on the ground, destroying it. The move is an automatic code violation in tennis rules, and because it followed the earlier warning, she was docked a point. That's when Williams began arguing with the umpire, Carlos Ramos. The situation escalated with Williams demanding an apology and calling Ramos a thief for docking the point. Ramos then gave her a third code violation for verbal abuse, costing her a whole game. And in tennis, that is a rare penalty, particularly in a final. Williams told Ramos and other officials that a man would not be criticized for the comments and the behavior that she displayed. And he certainly wouldn't be docked a game. She said it was a double standard. Many people agreed. Others, including Martina Navratilova, said even if that's the case, it doesn't excuse Williams' behavior on the court. Well, in the midst of all of that debate, an Australian political cartoonist created an image of Serena Williams stomping on her racket. Her features were exaggerated, and a baby's pacifier was at her feet. Cartoonist Mark Knight and his defenders called it satire. Others said it was racist and sexist, and there's a lot to unpack there. So this hour, we're going to discuss the role of satire in the current climate and the controversy surrounding the image and the issues at the match itself. And by the way, the newspaper where Mark Knight is regularly published in Australia defended him, and their newest edition has a cover issue that says, "Welcome to PC World, a satire-free zone." Let's welcome our guest for the hour. Amanda Chestnut is back with us, an artist and communications coordinator at Flower City Arts Center. Amanda, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Mara Ahmed, a filmmaker and artist. Mara, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And Dick Roberts is here, an artist and the former political cartoonist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Dick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask all three of you first to weigh in on what you saw with that cartoon, and while our listeners listen to this conversation, for those who have seen the cartoon, there's a lot to talk about. If you haven't seen the cartoon, if you're driving in your car, please don't pull over and, you know, hurt yourself. But if you're listening at work on a mobile device, we're going to make sure that is posted on our various platforms, because you ought to see it to get a sense for what we're talking about. Amanda, how did that image strike you?
I was, the first time I saw it, it had been shared by people who were already beginning to dissect what the image meant as far as the representation of Williams, the representation of Osaka. So I had a lot of context around the image when it first showed up. It's funny that you mentioned that there was a pacifier in the image, because I've been looking at it for days and I didn't even see that part until you mentioned it. So I was initially struck by Williams' features, how exaggerated they were, that her hair was drawn as kinky and wild, even though that's not how she wears it at all, that her opponent was drawn with slick blonde hair, even though that's not how she wears it at all. So it was, there was a lot of... For satire, it was so wild, it was almost imaginary. It was such an inaccurate representation for what I saw.
And Amanda, just to kind of make sure, you know, I think we're putting a point on this, and Dick will talk about this in a moment. Cartoonists, satirists, will exaggerate for effect. Would the exaggeration you saw looked more like classic racist exaggeration?
The exaggeration that was used on Williams was borderline pickaninny, yes. The exaggeration that was used on Osaka, her opponent, was blatant whitewashing. It was, and again, both were so much so that it wasn't almost even recognizable for either of those caricatures. They had gone so far beyond depicting the individuals as with features that actually are familiar and true, that they were so blown out of proportion that were they not in that specific setting and wearing those specific clothing, you would not have been able to recognize them.
Now, you use the phrase, you know, borderline pickaninny in terms of the art, which our listeners will remember the racist panel that was taken down from the Denzel Carousel, which was a form of roughly 100-year-old pickaninny art. The National Association of Black Journalists put it this way. They say, the racist cartoon of Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka by Mark Knight of the Herald Sun is repugnant on many levels. The cartoon not only exudes racist, sexist caricatures of both women, but Williams' depiction is unnecessarily Sambo-like. So these are terms, again, that some of our listeners may not be all that familiar with, but there is a history there.
There is a long history there, and anybody who can navigate without needing to be familiar with those words is a lucky individual, I think. There's a lot of misrepresentation, dehumanization, and degradation that goes into the history of and the meaning behind Sambo images, behind pickaninny images, and not knowing either of those words familiarly enough to automatically have an image come to your mind is definitely a privilege.
Mara, what did you make of the cartoon?
Well, I found the cartoon to be very racist. And there's an article in the New York Times that talks about how, actually, you were talking about how caricature is by definition a distortion and exaggeration. But then there's this article that talks about how the history of cartoons and comics is actually very deeply imbricated with the history of racism. So either you push back against that history and you distort and exaggerate and make a point in a different way, or you choose to be a racist in the 21st century. So to me, that's like very clear.
And I look at the image itself. Amanda just mentioned she didn't even notice the pacifier, which is drawn very small on the court there. And if the artist, this is why I would love to ask Mark Knight, the artist, if you're just trying to make a point that you think she was acting like a child or a baby, you would have accentuated the pacifier or something else, as opposed to all. I just don't. And other artists have sort of noted this as well. What he chose to exaggerate was not the point about making her the baby. It was the features of her physically,
yes.
Her face, her lips, her hair, her body itself.
And I also want to make the point that, you know, cartoons are not just for entertainment. That's not their only purpose. They also create certain visual codes and a certain mm-hmm. shorthand for an idea or a concept, and a particular racist language, which can shape the, you know, political and social landscape in a very powerful way. So it's not just something that's amusing. It's not just entertainment. It's much more profound than that.
Okay. Dick, what did you think when you saw the cartoon?
Well, I guess my first thought was that when you're doing a cartoon or a caricature, you do exaggerate. There's no doubt about it. It's just part of the process. You pick a feature on somebody and you might exaggerate that feature. If they have a fairly large nose, you might make it larger. And whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure I know. But I thought one of the thoughts I had after all the furor was that if that caricature had been done of a white woman, probably no one would call it racist, the exaggeration. But I think because it was of Serena Williams and she's black, I think that brought it out. And I don't know if the cartoonist, the artist, was racist or not, but he probably should have been a little more careful, especially nowadays. Perhaps he shouldn't have exaggerated her features as much as he did. And the hair flying, I can see where any artist would use that to depict action, movement. The hair is flying, but maybe it was a little too extreme.
I don't know if extreme, and I certainly take the point about caricature.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm hearing when I hear the criticism is that the choice of caricature was just about every kind of feature that has historically been used to make people of color, particularly people of African descent, black people, look, intentionally make them look less than human.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. So it's not just, well, that person's got a big nose, I made it bigger, or that person's got big feet, I made them bigger. It's that, are we exaggerating features that historically have been used to hurt?
Well, I don't know if you can exaggerate enough. In other words, whatever you use, somebody's going to find some fault in it, because you are limited as to what you can do with someone's features. If you make the eyes too big, I suppose you could get criticized for that. Like I said, if it's a black person and you're doing the exaggeration, you're going to be called on it, I'm sure. If it's not a black person, people probably will just pass it by, and okay, they'll either like it or not like it.
Mara, did you want to add to that?
Yes, I wanted to say it's not the caricature of just one individual. The problem is that it's a caricature of an entire group of people mm-hmm. who have been in history oppressed.
Right.
And so therefore you are reinforcing certain extremely dangerous stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And that's why Amanda was talking about, like, minstrel shows, or, you know, the typical caricature of the mammy or blackface. That's what we're seeing in that cartoon. And so that has a very violent and horrible history that it's referencing. And so we can't ignore that. So we're not mm-hmm. just talking about an individual. We're talking about a marginalized group of people.
Okay. Amanda, do you want to add to that?
I think that if you look at the history of the depiction of prominent people of color in political cartoons, there is, like, when you think about the cartoons of President Obama, he was drawn with big ears and a big nose because he has a wider nose and he definitely has big ears. But where people felt like the line was crossed was when that caricature began to resemble a monkey. So when you look at Williams, the cartoon of Williams, does she have larger lips? Does she have, does she sometimes wear her hair kinky? Is she muscular? Yes, all of those things. But when you then cross the line and begin to make her look like a gorilla, which again is an animal that is often used as a base for caricatures for people of color in a way to dehumanize them, that's when we begin to see a problem that is rooted in this historic systemic racism.
So, you want to add to that too, Mara?
Yeah, I just thought of, like, another example in history. So, for example, if you look at a lot of the cartoons that were coming out, like, in the 1930s in Germany, they were extremely anti-Semitic. There was a book that was published, I think, in the late 1930s called The Poisonous Mushroom, in which there were these horrible depictions of the Jewish citizens of Germany, you know, as looking a particular way. So exaggerating particular features, but not just of an individual, of a particular group of people. And so that was done in order to kind of soften the ground for what was to happen later in the 1940s. And so it has a very powerful dehumanizing effect. And I guess that's what we're talking about with this cartoon.
Yeah. Let me turn to what the cartoonist himself said. I think we have some sound from that. First, I'll read some of the words, and then he's only done one interview that I know of since then, and he's kind of gone underground, jumped off Twitter, and says that his family had received some threats, and so he's going to re-examine how he draws in the future, and he even said he may have to pull his punches in the future, which is not indicative of someone with remorse over it, just saying he doesn't like being threatened. What he did say in the article in the Herald Sun was, quote, "The cartoon that I drew about Serena is about her poor behavior on the day, not about race. I drew this cartoon Sunday night after seeing the U.S. Open final and seeing the world's best tennis player have a tantrum, and thought that was interesting. And the world has now just gone crazy," he said in a statement. His editor, Damon Johnston at the newspaper backed him up, saying, quote, a champion tennis player had a mega tantrum on the world stage, and Mark's cartoon depicted that. It had nothing to do with gender or race. Let's listen to what Mark Knight said in that only interview he's done.
One of the greatest players of all time, who I have admired and drawn many times, having a dummy spit. And I can say that when I drew the cartoon, it was like, yeah, that's not bad. And off it went. Her facial expressions are one of somebody having a dummy spit. I don't know how I could have done it any other way. Look, I'd say in my defence, I'm not a racist. I've done cartoons supporting Adam Goods in his booing situation.
Let's ask the panel. You were kind of making.
I don't know the word that he was using instead of tantrum. I don't know what that word is.
Yeah, there might be some sort of colloquialism to Australia that I don't know there. But otherwise, he's saying he doesn't know how he could have done it any other way.
You said yourself, like, I didn't notice the pacifier. He could have very easily put a pacifier in one hand and a broken racket in the other and put her in a diaper with a tennis tutu over it, and we all would have gotten the point. There's lots of ways to demonstrate tantrums. And a lot of, I'm feeling a little mind blown right now, that they were so harsh in criticizing her response. I'm not so young that I don't remember players like McEnroe. She did raise her voice and she did sound angry, but she wasn't spittle flying, blotchy, bulging veins, actually threatening the umpire himself. Like, I've seen in tennis specifically much, much worse, much more violent, much more angry reactions. And while you could criticize her for being emotional, that exaggeration of this emotional woman was enraged and very angry is another thing that is faced not only by female athletes, but especially by women of color. So
the stereotypical angry black woman.
Black woman, yes.
Okay. And by the way, the term that I think people get hung up on, dummy spit, is an Australian colloquialism for just a tantrum. So producer Megan Mack flagging that.
Where does that...
A dummy spit is the term.
That sounds really ableist to me. I don't know if I want to know what the roots of that word are.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. I'm just, again, just sharing what we were able to glean from that. So, Dick, what would you say to the cartoonist here, to Mark Knight, who's saying he doesn't know if he could have done it any other way, that he's not a racist, that the whole world's gone crazy, and that nobody even appreciates satire anymore?
Well, I thought that what he could have done, I suppose, was to show Serena Williams throwing her racket down and leave it at that. But I know when you're doing a cartoon and or a caricature, you exaggerate. And in this case, this is what he did. But I don't think he'll do it again, depending on who he's doing, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think he will either, but I don't know if that's because he feels like he's done anything... if he's gone adrift at all here. This is Alana Lenton writing for The Guardian today with the headline, "The Serena Williams Cartoon Exposes Australian Ignorance on Race." And Alana writes, quote, "Australia's white-dominated press lacks the racial literacy to see racism and to challenge racists. If there is one thing that people the world over know about Australia, it is that this is a deeply racist country. Not only are the original owners of the land treated as less than fully human, but we indefinitely lock asylum seekers in camps on all but colonized islands. White Australia does not discuss race well." And they're saying, she goes on basically to say, this is perfectly exemplified by the white media in Australia saying, wait a second, Mark Knight? You can't say he's a racist. So there's a little bit of I think ignorance. I'm not sure it's all malice. I think there's a lot of white journalists looking at this cartoon going, I don't get it. Help me see it. But the question is, are they listening? Let me ask all three of you before we go to the phones, because now the phone's ringing. You've touched some nerves here today. What do you want someone like Mark Knight, Amanda, to do here in this case that let's be as generous as we can to him as a cartoonist and say he really thought he was just exaggerating features as he saw them, not for racist purpose, and he was just trying to depict what he thought was an athlete throwing a tantrum. Not knowing the history, it's hard to imagine a world-renowned cartoonist not knowing the history of certain racist art, but let's just give him that. What do you want him to know?
He's honestly more than welcome to keep doing whatever it is he feels like he wants to do. It's well within his right. He doesn't have to learn that history. He doesn't have to familiarize himself with Piccaninny. And I don't have to share his links or click on his newspaper links or share his cartoons or, you know, so he can and probably will keep doing as he wants, but I think that there's a point at which he needs to recognize that not only are people upset by his behavior, but people will encourage him in ways that he can make a positive change for himself and for his community. And if he chooses not to do that, that's fine. But then people will choose not to engage with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mara?
Like Amanda said, he can choose to do whatever he wants, but I think this is a good opportunity for him to maybe learn a little bit more about history, about racism, not just in the United States, but also in his own country, in Australia, where I know that it's a big issue. And also not to whine so much and moan so much about the backlash, because there is going to be backlash, whether you're aware of that history or not. That history exists. It's a fact. So either you can learn more about it and become perhaps a more evolved person, or you can remain stuck and do whatever you're doing, but then don't whine about the response you're getting from the world.
Okay. Dick, I wonder if in your career, if you experienced anything at all like that. And let me just say, as someone who hosts 500 hours of live radio a year, I'll give you an example of something that I'm willing to own. I used to turn a phrase maybe 3 years ago on the show. I've told this story before. That is clearly anti-Semitic, and I had no idea. No idea the origins of it. Nothing. And I got a really kind but firm email from a listener who said, I think you made a mistake in good faith, but I want you to know the background. Now, of course, I start reading and I'm horrified. And I have to own that. I didn't know, and I wish I weren't ignorant. But from there forward, not only should I have known, I should have found a way to educate myself more, but I made the mistake. I own it. I don't necessarily hear that from Knight. I don't know that he's willing to say that this was a mistake. But have you had any moments in your own career drawing where you look back and you go, boy, I wish I had done that one differently?
I don't remember any. Okay. But then I come from a different time period. I know that racism's been around a long time.
Well, forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
But I've never had a problem with that. I often thought now with President Trump in office now, and I was a cartoonist, I could see all kinds of possibilities, but I don't know that I'd take advantage of them just because of the flashbacks, you know.
Are you worried that we are too sensitive?
No, I can't say I'm worried about it, but I suspect that perhaps this cartoonist in Australia may be careful next time. But he comes from a background where he probably wasn't aware of the racism that's been going on all over the world. I'm surprised if he hasn't, but...
I think it's maybe possible, but it doesn't sound like he's sort of internalizing much, especially when their headline today is a satire-free zone. Welcome to the PC world.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a publication that says, boy, thanks for helping us see where this one might have been a problem. Let me get Richard in Canandaigua first on the phone. Go ahead, Richard.
Oh, hi. I'm looking at the cartoon here, and my beef is really with the cartoonist as a... kind of a sophomore. You know, cartoonists can be effective commentators on the news. And what does he pick? He picks this theme that we've all thought of, that Serena always wants to win. Okay, so what else is new? If it misses an opportunity to send up the real issue in that episode. And that was the fact that everybody was talking past everybody else. Nobody understood anybody. Neither the line coach understood Serena, or Serena the line coach, or when the catalyst that started it all was the coach. And it was an issue of miscommunication all around. And that, if that had been the theme of the cartoon, he would have come up with a really interesting cartoon and all this idiocy that we see on the cartoon itself. As a cartoonist, I wouldn't pick a theme that's so simple-minded as Serena always wants to win, and then render it in such an offensive way.
Richard, thank you. That's actually an interesting point, because, you know, Serena was initially offended not because there was a violation, but because she felt the insinuation was the particular violation. She received coaching during a match was an insinuation that she was cheating. And she said, I have a daughter now. What message am I sending? I don't cheat. I don't cheat to win. I've never cheated to win. And interestingly enough, after the match, her coach said, oh, yeah, I was trying to coach her. I just don't think she saw me. So an interesting cartoon would be Serena's reaction privately to him must have been furious. Like, look, dude, I don't need your coaching during the match. I can handle myself. And that would have been a really interesting cartoon to depict, as opposed to, as Richard says, the predictable, well-worn, tired, she's always angry, she's always emotional, she needs to win. I think that's a very interesting point, Richard, and I appreciate that. Here's another side, though, and I'll kick this to the panel. Tim emails the program and says, it's sad so much emphasis is on Serena Williams' bad behavior and so little on the extraordinary performance of a 20-year-old in her first Grand Slam while playing against a legend. The cartoon outrage is one more example of the PC crowd showing intolerance for free speech that does not side with their particular bent of the day. The cartoon gross exaggeration was in poor taste, but so be it. That's from Tim. Okay, Mara, what would you say to Tim?
Well, there's so many things that I want to say. So first of all, something that Amanda had mentioned earlier, the whitewashing of Naomi Osaka in the same cartoon is also very interesting to me. So Naomi is actually biracial. Her mother is Japanese. Her father is Haitian. And it's interesting that the whole discourse about race is so black and white, literally, that if you don't fit anywhere between these two polar opposites, it's like there's no room for you. And so Naomi doesn't fit in that very black and white discourse. And that made me think of the drop rule, which was like, if you have even for many, many years, socially as well as legally, even if you had one drop of black blood, you were categorized as black. So there's like not a spectrum of a brown in between the black and the white. Either you're pure white, and if you're not, then anything else doesn't matter. You're just black. And so Naomi doesn't kind of fit in that very, in that binary. So I found that very interesting. And then even though she's black, her father is Haitian, she's not white. That as a woman of color, she is drawn as being very white is also very interesting, how she's whitewashed. So she is this representation of what a female tennis player should look like. You know, she's slender, she's blonde. She has a small frame, you know, she's like a Chris Evert lookalike or something like that, even though she's not white. So that's also very interesting. And I think the reason that that's done is so that they can create this contrast with Serena, who is the ultimate caricature of a black, angry black woman. You know, she's like Hulk-like in the hair and the lips and everything exaggerated. And so there's this this binary between the what a woman should look like and how she should behave on the court, and what she shouldn't look like and the way that she shouldn't behave on the court. And anger is a big part of it. It's like, you know, everyone is talking about Serena's tantrum and her explosion and her meltdown. But the way I see it, I don't actually see a meltdown. I just see that she was angry because she was accused of cheating. And for an athlete who has, you know, who is at that stage, one of the best athletes in the world, when they're accused of cheating, I can understand that a response of anger would be a very legitimate response. So that's also very interesting, how good women are not supposed to be angry. You know, that's also an interesting part of this whole discussion.
All right, Amanda, you want to respond to Tim, who emails to say that this is just the PC class calling out people who aren't with the particular bent of the day.
I I think that there's, if you are willing to listen to the conversation that's happening around this, a lot more nuance and depth going on than people just running around like they're on fire screaming that this man in Australia is a racist. One racist in Australia does not impact my life. I don't really care about one racist in Australia. Deeply, truly, it doesn't have any influence on my day-to-day. What does have an influence on my day-to-day is what Mara's talking about, this representation of Black as bad and Black as angry and whiteness as acceptable and decent and docile and right. So I think that there is, because of the history that is behind this, because of the fact that Osaka is biracial, as am I, and the fact that there's a lot of conversation about William's rage, but not a lot of conversation about everything that she did after the match to comfort Osaka, to bring her into the limelight, to tell people to cheer for her instead of booing the judge or booing the event. She really did do her best to, once she realized the situation had been out of control, to rein it back, to diffuse it, to turn the lights away from herself, to put them on her opponent. I think that there is a lot of nuanced conversation about who these two individual athletes are and how they are talked about and how they are represented and what that means for women of color more broadly. So I hope that those who are upset that this is the PC topic of the day would instead take a little bit of time to really listen to the conversations that are happening around the entirety of the event.
Okay. And let me turn to Dick with a question on sort of nuance before I get back to your phone calls, because the phones have lit up, but I haven't even mentioned the number. It's 844-295-TALK. If you'd like to call the program, it's 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. By the way, I that's another great point from Amanda. Another interesting way to draw that cartoon would have been to focus on Serena sort of getting over on the referee saying, you know, you wanted to, in Serena's view, she might have thought, you're making this all about me and you're being unfair to me, but I'm not going to let you ruin this for Osaka. And she really did, I think, a really admirable job of that in what must have been a very tough moment. But Dick, where my brain goes on this a little bit is, I think about, of all people, Malcolm Gladwell. Gladwell's the guy who likes to reduce complex things into simple narratives. And usually I read Gladwell or I listen to his podcast and I think, yeah. And then like a day later, I'm like, no. You know, and I, you know, then I start thinking, no, you've exaggerated or you've reduced this too simply. And most of the time the world is complex and nuance should be sort of grappled with. And maybe cartoonism is in that category of things that, to me, you got to do it really well to make a point, because otherwise you're just exaggerating and caricaturing what is something that's more complex. When is your craft done well? When it does what? When cartooning does what is when it succeeds, Dick?
Well, if you're going to project the message, then you have to do the best you can, but you still have to be careful. Now, I agree entirely with what they were saying, and I think the cartoonist in Australia is going to be very careful. I would assume he would be. I know I would be.
But you still, the craft is still important to you, and it was a lot of work for you.
Very much.
So when you're effective, what do you think you've done for the public?
Good question.
And forget the Serena thing. This is sort of a cartooning in general.
Well, just to present whatever message somebody gives me to do a cartoon to, whether I have to exaggerate a little bit or not, but just present the idea so that whoever sees it will understand it very quickly.
And will understand it in a way that maybe helps them with an understanding of an issue.
Sure.
Whether it's about politics,
whatever
sports,
it's about,
whatever it is,
yeah,
doesn't injure their understanding, but actually helps their understanding.
Exactly.
Okay. That's fair enough. And I think that's part of the reason that there's so much opprobrium for this particular cartoon is, are we really understanding the world better, or are we understanding something that is not really representative. So let's do this. Let's get our only break of the hour and let's come back to your phone calls. Mark, Brenda, we'll take your calls in a moment, and we'll take some more of your emails and thoughts as well as we talk about the backlash to Mark Knight's comment, cartoon, I should say. He is a cartoonist in Australia, but his cartoon about Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka went viral around the world. He has defended it as just satire and has said the critics don't have a sense of humor and don't understand satire. The critics have said this is purely racist and sexist, and it really kind of fits in a long historical frame there in particular. Our guests include Dick Roberts, you just heard him, an artist and a former political cartoonist for the Democrat and Chronicle, Mara Ahmed, who's a filmmaker and an artist, Amanda Chestnut, an artist and communications coordinator at Flower City Art Center and a writer for City Newspaper. Let's get that only break of the hour and right back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, Miriam Zinter joins us in studio. She wrote a Twitter thread about institutional racism on Sunday, and it has gone worldwide viral with tens of thousands of shares. Some prominent journalists have shared it. They say it's a great chance for all of us to learn about what institutional racism is and how it has affected families of color. Her story, next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. As I go to your phone calls, just a thought pump comes into my mind during the brief break we were talking about tennis's history of players who had outbursts at referees, and no one more famous than John McEnroe, though of course Jimmy Connors as well sort of earned some fame for that. And John McEnroe, as Amanda Chestnut pointed out in our break, is still riding to monetary gain that reputation as tennis's bad boy. He does the whole "you cannot be serious" ad campaigns. Ask yourself if Serena Williams could enjoy a similar kind of advertising of thematics for her public campaigns as an angry athlete in the same way that McEnroe could. I think the answer probably speaks for itself. Let me get Mark in Rochester next. Go ahead, Mark. Hi, Mark.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Oh, hello. Hello. Yes, so I was calling because I see the discussion going a lot and trying to match to, as Serena brought up, you know, this being either a sexist or a racist issue. I was watching the match, and I'm a big fan of Serena. I was actually hoping she was going to win. And throughout the match, I just saw her composure getting worse and worse. And prior to the call, she was getting, you know, destroyed by Osaka. And because the ref makes a call doesn't indicate anything. I played, you know, organized sports, and ref makes bad calls. They make right calls. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. You either play or you don't. And I thought it was a clear, you know, loss of her composure, and it just compiled. And I was kind of surprised when she kept going after the umpire requesting an apology. Like, the umpire never called her a cheater, never implemented anything. He just made a call, and it was the right call. By all means on the book, it was the right call. And for her to imply anything else, I don't see where that came from. And I don't know why the discussion is going around all this other stuff. To me, I just thought it was another, and she had done this in the past, where she's lost her composure and, you know, break rackets and so forth. And now the players have as well.
Yeah, Mark, I'm with you. Like, I mean, first of all, what she did in the past is not pertinent to this particular match. Reputation is not pertinent to the match. The umpire is supposed to be responding to what the actions in that match and in that moment are. And what you're saying is the penalties were actually based on rules. And I'll take the point on that. I mean, again, what Serena Williams' coach admitted after the match, that he was trying to coach her, and he's not supposed to do that. And so, but at the same time, I think we should kind of cool down everything with this. I don't think Serena Williams melted down. I think she was angry at that referee and kept after him in the way that a lot of people do when they're angry at an umpire in a baseball game, when men go after umpires on the tennis court too. And the notion of a game penalty when you're two games away from losing a final is almost unprecedented. So I take the point that she was certainly angry at him. I don't really understand the rest of it, though. I mean, it's kind of, for me, it's kind of like, so what? He didn't have to go to the game penalty, and most umpires don't do that, right?
That's what I was trying to make the point is, a game when you have a ref makes bad calls.
Yeah.
And if you react to the call in that type of manner, the call will never be changed, and the ref is not going to stop and say, I apologize, and I'll take the point away, and because that will just break his reputation of being a ref. Okay. It's up to you as the player to react. Your reacting is what's going to dictate what's going to happen going forward. And my point is that the ref made a call, which was the right call. You can either go and keep fighting at the ref until I play basketball and get a technical and get kicked out of the game, fine. Or you can say, you know what, it's a bad call. Let me focus on my game and what I can do to improve my situation. It was never an issue about him calling her or him implying that she cheated. So I didn't see where she got that. He said, if he said, like, hey, I think you're cheating, then I can understand that. He just made a call, which was the right call.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call. Mara, you want to jump in?
Yeah, can I just react to the statement that a bad call is just a bad call? So when I saw this story, and I was as I was reading everything that was happening and, you know, seeing what happened on the court, the first thing that came to mind was actually this book, Citizen, An American Lyric by Claudia Rankine, in which there's a whole chapter on Serena Williams. And I'm just going to quote like a couple of short lines from there. She says, "The body has memory. The physical carriage hauls more than its weight. The body is the threshold across which each objectionable call passes into consciousness." And so what she's basically talking about is that it's not just one bad call. It's an accumulation of racist microaggressions and injuries to the body, which explain an outburst or anger that might otherwise seem incredible or out of place. And so I think it's very important to make that point. So I'm actually working on my fourth film right now, and it's a film called, which is inspired by Claudia Rankine's book, and it's called The Injured Body, a film about racism in America. And for this film, I'm interviewing women of color and asking them to talk about the microaggressions that they experience on a daily basis. And the last group discussion that we did actually took place a few weeks ago. It went on for 5 hours. And I have to tell you that it was one of the most difficult things that I've ever filmed in my life. And just the stories of constant encroachments and transgressions and insults and humiliations and nonstop othering that people have to go through, especially women of color, is something which really is unbearable. It was hard for me to listen to it. It was hard for Rajesh Barnabas, who was filming it. It was hard for the other people who were in the room. The trauma is just unbearable. And so, you know, racism is much more than something that's institutional or structural. It's also something very personal, something very private. It's a transgression. It's an invasion of your private space, for example. So one of the stories that comes up over and over again as I'm doing these interviews is the touching of hair and the touching of bodies, of women's bodies, unwarranted touching, which again has a long, long history. So all of these things accumulate in the body and in your consciousness. And so your reaction is never a reaction to just the one bad call that happened in the one match. It's an accumulation. It's a history of many, many things.
And this also isn't the first time that Ramos, the umpire, had gone against Serena Williams. They've butted heads previously. He had also previously made calls against her sister Venus that implied that she had also been cheating with her coach. So there is a history with the Williams family and this line judge in particular that he has made calls against them that aren't calls that are typically made against other players. So there's talking about that memory of the body, it's not just all of the things that she has experienced on her way to being one of the best athletes in the world. She also has a standing relationship with this umpire, and it hasn't been positive. So there's a history there between the two of them as well.
Yeah, all of this makes me just wonder why the cartoonist chose, I keep going back to Richard's phone call, the kind of the laziest trope about Serena Williams. There's so much other interesting stuff that could have been there. And Dick, as someone who has worked in cartooning, I imagine there's all kinds of different options you have as a cartoonist. You don't just have to go, if you're drawing a cartoon about the Fast Ferry in Rochester, if you're drawing a cartoon about anything in the world, you've got options. You don't have to be lazy.
No, you've got options, but you just have to decide which ones you can use. The cartoonist in Australia had an option, and the one he chose has caused all this furor. And if he had gone in a different direction, as I said earlier, just show her dropping her racket or throwing it down, none of this probably would have happened.
That's probably true. Yeah. I still think it would have been a boring cartoon if he did that. But
it probably would have.
Yeah, fair enough. Our colleague Brenda Tremblay has called the program to share some of her own experience on this stuff. Hi, Brenda.
Hey, Evan. Great conversation as usual. Thank you so much. I just wanted to say I had an experience recently that makes me think that cartoon is a learning experience for all of us. I'm learning all the time, and I know your listeners are too. Like the memory of the body thing, I'd never heard of that before 5 minutes ago. So thank you for that. But anyway, about 2 months ago, we had this new recording into the WXXI library. I host the morning show on Classical 91.5, and it was all pieces of music by a woman composer named Manazuka, and one of them was a set of variations, a really well-crafted set of variations on the tune Dixie. Well, I put that on the air, and the phone lit up. Usually, classical music is sort of a controversy-free zone, if you know what I mean. Nobody gets upset about Beethoven. But a listener in the Finger Lakes called and said, I cannot believe I'm waking up to the strains of Dixie, in 2018. And I just thought of it as a piece of Americana, to be honest with you. And I did a little bit of research, and I found out sometime in the last couple of decades, that tune has become like the Confederate flag of music. I had no idea. And I read a little bit about its history. Abraham Lincoln loved it. He said he knew two tunes, Dixie and Not Dixie. I thought of it, Gone with the Wind. It was still, in my mind, innocent. And I think we're sort of at an interesting tipping point where we're all, because of the shifting demographics, all learning all the time, all experiencing kind of this mass paradigm shift. And I would call the listener back and say, thank you so much for telling me about Dixie, because I didn't know.
I think that's another data point that says, there's all kinds of learning that we all do throughout our lives. And, again, as the host of this show, if you're expecting perfect sort of purity from the host and no missteps, you're going to be disappointed in me, and I will own it when I make a mistake. I want to know. And Brenda, it sounds like you felt that was a good open door for you to learn about something that was wide open. Who knew?
Absolutely.
And a lot of people would say, well, you should have known, but we didn't know,
Yeah, and I feel like, I think the cartoonist you said earlier doesn't seem remorseful, but I bet he is. I bet he's going to rethink the way he sees the world a little bit.
That's all.
Thank
optimistic.
You.
Thank you, Brenda. That is an optimistic take and a generous take of Mr. Knight. Some final thoughts. Gary writes to us and just wants to know if we're applying sort of Americanized standards to an Australian issue, and the New York Times explored that issue as well. They raised the question, is it fair to hold an Australian to an American standard? I think it's okay to ask if things are different in different places, but I think, our standards on what is sort of hurtful or ignorant or racist, I think it is fair to ask that. Amanda Chestnut, what do you think?
I think it's absolutely fair, and I think it's especially fair for a nation like Australia, which, as Mara said, has its own legacy of racism that it doesn't really do a great job of dealing with. I think that there's... Yeah, no, it's especially in this situation, I think that it's a particularly fair thing to do. And Williams is an American.
Yeah, it's another great point. I mean, he's drawing about an American athlete. Yeah. Well, you think it's fair, Mara?
I don't actually think that these are American standards by any means. I just think that they're human standards. And these, like, racism is not just an American problem. It's a global problem. Being a Muslim woman, I can think of Charlie Hebdo, for example, and the Orientalist titillation their cartoons produce. The satire, the so-called satire, which is supposed to be directed at the powerful, but in their case is always directed towards the most marginalized in French society. So it's by no means an American problem, and it's by no means, I think, American standards. I think these are global issues, and we should talk in that language.
And Dick, as an artist, were you okay with people who are occasionally going to be tough on your work if they felt you were out of line?
Absolutely. I don't know how I would react. It depends on what the cartoon was and what they said, but I can understand that.
And I hope we are all open to that kind of criticism. Again, if you're looking for a moment to prove that I'm not perfect. Boy, you're going to find lots. But the question is, what do we do with that knowledge and that conversation and that opportunity? And I think that's because I got an email earlier as we get ready to close the hour. Someone says, oh, well, just more people who want to ban X, Y, and Z. I don't hear anybody using the word ban. In fact, Amanda Chestnut said earlier, you can draw whatever you want. It's not going to maybe impact me day to day. I'm not going to share your work. The question is, when someone creates content of some kind, writes something, draws something that does potentially hurt people, it's not a conversation about banning. I'm hearing a conversation about understanding. That's what I heard this hour from Amanda Chestnut, an artist and communications coordinator at Flower City Art Center. And thank you, Amanda. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Mara Ahmed, a filmmaker and an artist. Thank you, Mara.
Thank you.
And Dick Roberts, an artist himself and a former political cartoonist at the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, Dick.
Thank you.
All right. It's a short break. Much more connections coming up.